the first episode of Multiverse Musings, a DC Comics podcast. I'm Adam, and you may remember me from the Simply Superman Batman podcast. I decided to end that one and have it come to a close because things are changing in DC Comics, whether it be on television, in the movies, and of course in the comic books. In the comics, we have DC Rebirth. In the movies, we have the DC Extended Universe. And on television, we have, well, I've lost count of all we have. We have the Arrowverse. We have Krypton. We have Gotham. So there's a lot of different, and that's just to name a few. So there's a lot of different areas in TV alone. So I wanted to, instead of just covering Batman and Superman, who are great, and we're still going to cover a lot of, I wanted to expand to all the different areas of the DCU. So I thought Multiverse Musings, because there are basically each avenue of entertainment I view as a separate universe, and that's how Multiverse Musings at DC Comics, the name was born. Of course, I can't do it alone. I don't want to do it alone because who wants to just hear me talk? Even I don't want to listen to myself talk for extended periods of time. So I had to go search for a co-host. Now, I want to say thank you to my co-host on Simply Superman, Batman, Sam. He was wonderful. Scheduling didn't work out for this one. So I thought, where am I going to find another co-host with as much passion and excitement for DC Comics and the multiverse as I have? So I scoured literally the multiverse. And remember on Simply Superman Batman, I used to say that even though I didn't like Batman and Robin starring George Clooney and directed by Joel Schumacher, I always said there was somebody out there that liked that and appreciated that movie, and good for them. Well, in my scouring of the multiverse, I found that individual. And I thought, well, he's the only one. And he seems to love the rest of the DCU. So he's passionate about this stuff. Let me bring him on board. We can have a discussion about Batman and Robin eventually, God help me. And we'll air out our differences. But I'm going to let my co-host introduce himself. Go ahead.
Well, you better believe we're going to have that Batman and Robin discussion, Adam. I am Jordan Valdez. You might be familiar with me if you watch my YouTube show. That's Gotham News Network. And I've also guested on the DC Daily Drop podcast a couple times before. I want to thank you, Adam, so much for bringing me into this adventure. And I'm really excited about this podcast, getting started with Multiverse Music. And I think we're going to have a lot of fun on this podcast.
Yeah, and I'm excited. I heard you on DC Daily Drop, and I watched your YouTube channel, and I said this guy seems to love this stuff as much as I do. So let's bring him aboard. Now, the only problem with bringing you aboard is you were one of the listeners of Simply Superman Batman, and I always used to say, me and Sam, that we had five listeners. So now we're down to four. So I really need the four of you to come back, support us, and spread the word, because we need to build that. We got to at least get one more listener. Then if any more come along, it'll be great. But we've got a lot of news. And what we're going to do tonight is we're going to do a recap, because I haven't podcasted in what feels like months to me. So there's enough news that I said, well, I got to really catch up, and I really want to talk about some of this stuff. So we're gonna play a little bit of catch up with the news, and then because this past week, Batman the Animated Series turned 25, we're going to start a regular feature where we review episodes of Batman the Animated Series, and we're gonna do them in order that they appeared on the DVD. So tonight's episode will be on Leather Wings. Also, before we get started, Jordan, I think we have to wish our listeners and everybody else on the interwebs or wherever they may be tuning into this a happy Batman Day, because by the time they're listening to this, it will be Batman Day.
Absolutely. My favorite holiday of the year, and I think it's just perfect timing that we're going to be releasing this on Batman Day. And this year, it is also Harley Quinn Day, because she's sort of doing a takeover of Batman Day this year. So happy Batman Day and happy Harley Quinn Day as well, everyone.
Which is also appropriate given the amount of news related to Harley Quinn that we have this week. So let's get into the news. first of all, we're going to address the elephant in the room that is Ben Affleck's status as Batman. Now, truth be told, okay, this is the scenario. At Comic-Con, there was a report in the Hollywood Reporter. Am I correct on the source, Jordan? I think I am.
I believe it was, yeah.
I think Kim Masters wrote it, where she said, Warner Brothers is gracefully planning a in-film exit strategy for Ben Affleck as Batman, and that Justice League could very well be Ben Affleck's last turn as Batman. Well, Warner Brothers' Justice League panel was the day after this article dropped. And of course, you know, Ben Affleck was asked about it, and he said, I love playing Batman. He said that he would play an ape for Matt Reeves if Matt Reeves wanted him to. And he used expletives, which I'll try not to use on this show. Until we get to the Batman and Robin episode, then the expletives are going to fly. But until then, I'll try and keep it clean. And so he seemed very, you know, adamant that he would play anything for Matt Reeves, and he loved playing the character of Batman. I believe him when he says that. Later on, after the panel, he was asked again by Entertainment Weekly, this time about his status, and he said, my status is what it's always been. He said he had a three-picture deal to play Batman. He has one film left on that deal, and these are the words he used, if Warner Brothers wants him to. Where does that leave us? Well, whether Ben Affleck knows whether he's playing Batman after Justice League or not, and whether Warner Brothers knows, and I think they do at this point, we're not going to know officially until after Justice League comes out. Because right now, the studio's job, Ben Affleck's job, is to promote Justice League and make sure that that film opens properly and has as much anticipation going forward. So even if Ben Affleck knows as of this hour that he's leaving, he's not going to say it, because imagine the damage that it would do to Justice League. I mean, that's fair to say, right, Jordan?
Yeah, I mean, Justice League does not need any more bad PR than it's already got.
Right.
Much as I hate to admit it, it has gotten a lot of bad PR, so, yeah.
And so our stance is going to be this, that we have one film guaranteed with Ben Affleck as Batman, that's Justice League. We're not going to worry and start panicking about, oh no, he's not going to be Batman after this, or what have you, until we know officially from the studio's mouth.
Exactly.
Now, I'm going to do this now because I know that it's going to happen, or it's already has happened as we're recording this. Now, Jordan, have you been following the Twitter stream as of late, today?
Yeah.
Okay, well, what happened was, apparently it was made known through certain Batman-related websites. I think it was Batman News that pointed out that Matt Reeves, director of the Batman, recently started following Armie Hammer on Twitter, I believe. Now, if everybody remembers correctly, Armie Hammer was supposed to play Batman in George Miller's canceled Justice League Mortal film. Back, I believe it was 2007, 2008. Now, let's play devil's advocate for a second. Could this Twitter follow mean that Armie Hammer is going to be in the Batman in some capacity? Maybe, maybe not. But let's assume that he is, just for the sake of fun and speculation. I have a theory. Here are my three choices that Armie Hammer could potentially play in a Batman film. One, Harvey Dent / Two-Face, if they go the Two-Face route, or he could just be Harvey Dent. I'd love to see sometime in a live-action film, Tommy Elliot, a.k.a. Hush. And if you haven't read Hush, pause this podcast, go download it digitally from Comixology and read it. It's fantastic. But I could see Armie Hammer playing Hush. Or if Ben Affleck does not return for the Batman, I could also see Armie Hammer being our new Batman. What are your thoughts, Jordan?
Well, like you were saying before, my whole stance on Ben Affleck, I'm trying not to speculate too much about him leaving, just because I just want to enjoy his last film in terms of Justice League. And I've loved what we've seen of him as Batman and Batman v Superman, and the little bit we saw of him in Suicide Squad, and what we've seen of him in the Justice League marketing. So I just want to enjoy this one last film that we've got of, if it's just one last film with Justice League, I want to enjoy that of Ben Affleck in the role. If we get 15 more films of him as Batman, then I want to enjoy all 15 of those films. I mean, so if he does leave the role of Batman, I will be disappointed, because I love what we've seen of him in Batman v Superman and a little bit we've seen him in Suicide Squad and Justice League promo stuff. But if he does leave, I will be disappointed. But there's lots of other great actors out there that I think could be great Batman. So I don't think it'll be the end of the world if he winds up leaving. In terms of Armie Hammer, and in terms of this, you know, this Twitter sleuthing that people have been doing and finding out that he's followed by Matt Reeves, I think it's hilarious that we use that now to sort try and figure out if somebody's involved in one of these movies.
This is how we find our news now, based on who follows who on Twitter. I mean, it's ridiculous, but the speculation was going to happen, so I thought let me throw my hat into the ring now and just say it, and then whatever. Whatever comes of it, comes of it. But Armie Hammer has been bantied around with the DCEU for a while between Green Lantern and, you know, this and that. So I just thought, why not?
In terms of the sort of speculation that you gave, in terms of who he might be playing if he were going to be in Matt Reeves' Batman movie, first of all, if he is playing Two-Face, I do think it would probably be Two-Face, because unless they do a prequel, I feel like there was that tease in BVS that pretty heavily suggested that Harvey Dent was already Two-Face at this point in the universe, at this point in the DCEU timeline. In terms of him playing Hush, that would be the ideal scenario for me. Hush is one of my absolute favorite Batman villains, probably right behind the Joker, actually. I'm a huge fan of Hush. I'm a huge fan of Heart of Hush as well. Both of them will probably be in my top five favorite Batman comics of all time. And so I would love – Hush is like right at the top of my list in terms of if I were to choose the villain for Matt Reeves' Batman movie. So that would excite me a lot if that were the case. That is my thoughts on Armie Hammer and sort of the Ben Affleck situation, I guess.
And for the record, my let me just state my stance. In my ideal world where Adam gets everything he wants, Ben Affleck would star in the Batman for Matt Reeves. And if I got everything I want, he'd sign a two-picture deal to complete a potential trilogy, a two-picture extension.
That's what Black Mercy would show you?
Yes, that's what Adam wants. But, hey, life is what it is. I don't always get what I want. Jordan doesn't always get what he wants. We just got to wait and see. And like Jordan was saying, Justice League comes out in, by the time you're hearing this, less than 2 months. So let's enjoy the one film that we know we have Ben Affleck for, and then worry about what happens afterwards.
I've got to point out how exciting it is what you just said. Every time I think about it, like when you said Justice League will be out in less than 2 months by the time you hear this, I mean, you brought it up earlier, the Justice League Mortal film that Armie Hammer was originally going to play Batman in, and I remember how bummed I was when that didn't pan out.
Excited for that. I was
too.
Really, me honest too. To God.
And the fact that we're finally getting a live-action Justice League film, I mean, and we're so close. The fact that you can say less than 2 months, I mean, it's unbelievable.
I'm at the point where if I could, I'd go sit in the theater now. You know, I'd bring 2 months worth of a change of clothes, some soap, you know, like this. Sit there and just, hey, wait. But I can't, so, I'll kill time. So there we are. Let's just enjoy Ben Affleck as Batman for as long as we have him. On to actual news, because there is some. There's a lot of, you know, we said it's a Harley Quinn takeover of Batman Day. So, you know, Harley Quinn's got a busy film slate, which means we're going to get a lot more of Margot Robbie as Harley Quinn. And I have absolutely zero objections to that. As far as I'm concerned, if she can play Harley Quinn for forever, as far as if I had my way, we'd all stay eternally in this eternally youthful, and she could play Harley Quinn forever because she was perfect in Suicide Squad. But anyway, speaking of Suicide Squad, that's a good segue to start off with first. Remember that it was searching for a director, and at one point, the guy that did The Shallows, Wame Coletzera, was the front runner. Well, he decided to go off and do some Disney movie with The Rock. So he was out of the running. And then just last week, or just a couple of weeks ago, I should say, by the time you're listening to this, I feel like I'm in the past or whatever. I'm somehow in the past and future at the same time as I'm recording this. But since that time, a couple of weeks ago, Gavin O'Connor has been announced as the writer-director of Suicide Squad 2. Of course, Gavin O'Connor directed Warrior with Tom Hardy, the UFC movie, the Ultimate Fighting movie. And then he also recently directed Ben Affleck in The Accountant. Did you like those movies, Jordan?
Warrior I did not see. The Accountant I did see, and I love that movie. So I'm very excited about Gavin Connor's involvement. I was a little bit bummed when it turned out that Wame Coletzera wasn't going to be doing it. I loved his movies too. I loved The Shallows. I really liked Nonstop that he did with Liam Neeson. But right. Sort of once I heard O'Connor was coming on, it was like any disappointment I would have had from Wame Coletzera sort of not turning out to be doing this movie. Sort of that was all erased because I thought O'Connor did such a great job with The Accountant. And so I'm really excited. I'm hoping that he can maybe do something more grounded with the Suicide Squad 2.
I think that's a definite. I mean, look, I'll say it. I really liked Suicide Squad. I thought it was fun. But Enchantress was the weakest part of that movie. And that dance routine that she did at the end, that whole belly dancing thing, was not appealing.
For me, I thought Enchantress was, and not to get off on a Suicide Squad tangent, but I loved Enchantress at the beginning when she was in her first.
Yeah, movie, when she was in that Tim Burton phase.
Yeah, that was great. But then once she met up with Incubus and she turned into the sort of her costume changed and everything, then I wasn't as big a fan. But yeah.
Yeah. So I think that's a fair. I mean, look, we'll do a proper talk on Suicide Squad, but. Well, I'll just say it right here. The Joker should have been the villain. Sorry. That's my thought. But I think you're right. I think it will, especially with the way Gavin O'Connor's films are, I think it will go for a more grounded approach. He's very good at writing characters and ensembles. So I think we're and he knows how to write some action scenes too. He's good at that. So I think we're in good shape. It was reported in both The Hollywood Reporter and Variety that production is eyeing a late 2018 start date. And the reason that is because it is going to have to accommodate actor schedules, namely Will Smith, who is off doing two movies, Gemini, and he's also playing the genie in Aladdin. So that's why... starting production in late 2018. Margot Robbie is going to return as Harley Quinn, obviously, and Jared Leto is also expected to return as the Joker. So given the 2018 start date, it could come out in 2019, conceivably.
Well, it'd be late
2019. Yeah, it would be late 2019, early 2020.
Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
That's where Wonder Woman 2 is right now. Yeah. So I'm sure that they put those so close together, but you never know.
But hey, as long as the cameras start rolling, it'll be released when it's ready. That's my theory. So I'm glad the ship has righted where Suicide Squad 2 is concerned. They found their man, and now the process of filmmaking can actually take place. Speaking of the Joker, oh boy, this another busy man. This is going to get a little bit weird, what I'm about to say. I mean, most of you have probably heard this by now. Anybody with a passing interest in this stuff has heard it. But let's talk about the DCEU Joker, and that's going to make sense. And for the people that haven't heard this news, all 1.5 of you, this is going to make sense in a minute. But in addition to Suicide Squad 2, and apparently also in addition to Gotham City Sirens, there is going to be a spin-off film with Harley Quinn and the Joker. Tell us about the players involved in that, Jordan, if you will.
In the Harley Quinn and Joker film, who we've got is we've got Glenn Picara and we've got John Requa involved in this movie. And if you're not familiar with them, they wrote and directed Focus with Margot Robbie and Will Smith. And then they also directed Whiskey Tango Foxtrot, which also starred Margot Robbie. Those are both films that I was a big fan of, especially Focus. So yes, they will be involved in this Joker and Harley Quinn movie.
And correct me if I'm wrong, they also did Crazy Stupid Love, correct?
I believe that is correct, yes.
Which is a perfect, you know, a perfect tagline for the Joker and Harley Quinn's relationship, so I think it fits. And they are also the creators and producers of the hit television series This Is Us. I personally don't watch it. It's not my thing. But I have my sister and my mother who watch it, and they love it.
Hey, they're Green Arrow's on there, man.
I know. They're trying to get me to watch it.
I haven't seen it either.
Every time I see them watch it, I see them. They have tears in their face. They're crying. And I'm like, listen, real life is depressing as it is enough. I don't need to watch a show to make me cry. But a lot of people love that show. And it's an ensemble, so it's very character-driven. And that bodes well for Harley Quinn and the Joker. And I think, you know, if I was in charge of Warner Brothers and or their marketing department, I'd call this film Mad Love, but that's just me.
That would be great. That would
Again,
be great.
nobody pays me for my opinions. So I just give them, and if Warner Brothers wants to use that title, go for it. It makes sense. Now, that's not the only Joker movie that's being talked about around Hollywood.
Hold on. Before we move on to that one, one thing that I wanted to say about the Joker Harley movie.
Oh, did I miss something? Oh, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, in terms of what I think that this movie could turn out to be, first of all, I'm really excited that I'm really excited to see more of Jared Leto and Margot Robbie because they were the highlights. The two of them were the highlights of Suicide Squad for me.
Yes.
But then the other thing I wanted to point out about that movie is that you alluded to perhaps the naming of Mad Love, and perhaps it could take some inspiration from that comic and then that episode of the new Batman Adventures, of course. But the other thing that sort of makes me think of, and that it also that this also plays into the next piece of news that I know you're about to bring up, but it reminds me a little bit of so with this movie, we really don't know what, if any, role Batman is going to have in it. And what that reminds me of is the Brian Azzarello, Libermejo Joker comic.
You just segued perfectly, but go ahead, continue.
Right. That's what I was talking about. I'm going to bring this up with our next piece of news as well. That reminds me of it as well. But in terms of doing a Joker story with very minimal involvement from Batman, I think that that comic, which I absolutely adore, I think it really sets the template for it. And that comic focuses almost exclusively on the Joker, and Harley's in it a little bit too.
I just read it the other day, actually, for the first time. Yes,
wow.
Correct.
And did you enjoy it?
Well, listen, I don't want to spoil anything because we're going to review this. Breaking news. Okay. I'm just telling Jordan this now. One of our comic reviews, and one of the things I talked about with Jordan off air, because, you know, we like to plan things, I said my goal is to do more comic book reviews. That's one thing I didn't get a chance to do on Simply Superman Batman. So I want to do that more often. So we will review Joker. But to answer your question, to say it without going into spoilers, I really liked it, and I'll elaborate on that when we get to that comic.
Absolutely, I can't wait for that.
But what I will say is this: also in relation to the Joker Harley movie. What I think was the Hollywood Reporter, one of, either the Hollywood Reporter or Variety, or maybe both, said that Joker Harley is not taking in place, is not taking the place of Gotham City Sirens. It's in addition. And so what they alluded to was the fact that Suicide Squad 2 would happen first. It would shortly be followed by Joker Harley, which would then dovetail into Gotham City Sirens. That's what the report alluded to. Now, plans could change as things, you know, move into development, like whichever one comes to the forefront first will probably get pushed forward in line, right? But that's the plan. And it makes logical sense, to be honest with you, that organization of it. So I'm on board with that. If that's the way it plays out, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, me as well. I think that I would have been a little bit bummed if this was replacing the Gotham City Sirens film, yeah. Because I'm really excited about that as well. I'm a huge Catwoman fan, so in terms of her being introduced in the DCEU, which presumably is going to happen first in that film. Yeah. You know, that's one of the DCEU films that's been sort of reported that I'm most excited about. So I'm glad that we're getting that, and we're getting this Joker Harley film in addition to that. So that's good.
Right, and I can't wait for Gotham City Sirens. But it's also like I don't even want to say a trilogy because it's not. It's a Harley Quinn quadrology, I guess it would be. So if you started with Suicide Squad and then moved your way, you know, through Suicide Squad 2, Harley, Joker, and Gotham City Sirens. I find that interesting.
Yeah, and I mean, she's one of the most popular DC characters right now. So they'd be smart to be featuring her this heavily in their movies.
And it makes chronologically that order that was suggested in those two trades makes a lot of sense. The other news is in terms of there's a Joker standalone movie in development. Now, the key with this one, the key information with this one is, it's not going to star Jared Leto, and it's not a part of the DCEU. What it is DC and Warner Brothers' effort in creating a new label where they can take existing characters, for example, that are in the DCU, but explore alternative storylines and situations that is not tied to the DC Extended Universe. So basically what this new film effort to me is, with this new film line, or label as they call it, and by the way, this label is unnamed, well, I'm going to name it for you now, and if Warner Brothers doesn't use this name, in my opinion, it's the most galactically stupid mistake they could make. Basically, what we're talking about here is an Elseworlds DC movie line. That's what it sounds like to me, right?
That's me clapping. Yeah.
And Jordan approves because last time I checked, we don't have a clap track, so that was Jordan clapping. But it should be called Elseworlds. But that's what it is. Jordan, who are the principals involved in this Joker movie, and what is the general idea behind it? What's the log line, if you will? What's the whole sort of premise of it?
Go ahead. Well, the names attached are Todd Phillips to direct, Scott Silver to write, and Martin Scorsese to produce. All three of those names really excite me. Todd Phillips, I'm a huge fan of the Hangover trilogy, and at first it like you were saying, how this movie is going to be, it seems like it's going to be like a very gritty crime drama film, sort of in the vein of some of Scorsese's earlier movies like Taxi Driver and stuff like that. And at first I was like thinking about Todd Phillips, and I was like, hey, he's a comedy director. I was like, that'd be kind of weird for him to direct a movie like that. And then I started thinking about it more, and I was like, okay, here's the thing. The Joker's a clown. And if they take from his Killing Joke origin, he was a comedian before that. So it's like it sort of makes perfect sense for a comedy director to direct this. And but then he's also got Scott Silver helping him out, and I'm a huge fan of Scott Silver too, and he might be able to add some more dramatic experience you'd be looking for. He wrote 8 Mile, which was the Eminem movie. He wrote The Fighter with Christian Bale, which is a phenomenal movie. And then he also wrote The Finest Hours, which was with Steve Trevor, with Chris Pine, which is also a really good movie. So that excites me too. And then Martin Scorsese, I think that name speaks for itself in terms of why he'd be exciting.
I mean, if that name doesn't excite, like, look, you could put Martin Scorsese on anything, and I'd be excited. But the fact that he's on a crime drama, 80s set Gotham City, Joker movie, take my money is my response. Now, he's still, now to be fair, Martin Scorsese is still in negotiations. They're still working out the exact nature of his involvement. So I just wanted to point that out. Now, a lot of internet commentary that I've seen are getting bent out of shape over the fact that it's a Joker origin story. And the whole thing is, well, Joker shouldn't have an origin, and it should be mysterious, and that's part of the allure of the character. Look, I get where people are coming from with that, okay? But we've had that with The Dark Knight. How are you going to top the multiple choice origin of the Joker, where you don't really know how he came to be? You can't top The Dark Knight. So go a different way with it. Give me a Joker.
For me, I'm not one of those people. I understand it too. I'm not one of those people that has an issue with the Joker having an origin. I think you can really do it well either way, as you alluded to. The Dark Knight did a great job of not giving Joker a stand origin.
Right.
The Killing Joke is an example. That leaves it up to your interpretation whether the origin presented that is true or not. But I love it. I think it adds a really cool dynamic to the Joker for it to be true. So I always read it as though it is true. So I'm totally fine. If it's done well, I'm totally fine with the Joker.
And Batman 89 gave us a Joker origin, and nobody was getting bent out of shape then.
This is a debate for another day. To me, the Joker origin in Batman 89 is basically a lesser version of the Killing Joke origin.
Oh, I'm in total agreement with you. But what I'm saying is, nobody got bent out of shape. Oh my God, they're showing the Joker's origin. What are they, nuts? Nobody got bent out of shape. They were bent out of shape over Michael Keaton, and look how that turned out. So, hello. And here's the way you do this movie, and you alluded to it. You do the part of the Killing Joke that doesn't involve shooting Barbara Gordon, right?
Yep.
So you do the flashback stuff, the failed comedian, all that jazz. I would throw in a little bit of Scott Snyder's run where he was part of the Red Hood gang. You know, that whole, you remember in the New 52?
Yeah.
There was a couple issues on that. Throw in a bit of that. And then the rest of the story, when he becomes the Joker, full stop. Because I think they're not going to make a Joker movie where he doesn't become the Joker. That's, if you're going to do a Joker movie, you better show me the Joker. So when he becomes a Joker, the rest of the movie becomes the Brian Azzarello, Lee Bermejo Joker graphic novel. That's how I would do it.
Hey, and that sounds amazing to me, because those are my two favorite Joker comics of all time. So that's exactly what this sounded like to me too. It felt like a sort of a melding of my two favorite Joker comics of all time into one movie. And as you alluded to, I mean, as you just sort of laid out, that would be amazing, I think.
So again, that's all we know right now. There's no need to panic. Let's see how it develops. Let's get some more information, and then we can judge more informed, from a place of more knowledge and more information. But I'm on board with just the idea of an Elseworlds line, I'm on board with, because my hope is that one day we'll get a Superman Red Sun. One day we'll get a live-action Gotham by Gaslight movie, and one day we'll get a Batman Beyond movie. That's my hope.
That would be great. What it reminds me a lot of is what the DC UAOM line has done, In terms Correct. Of they ever since 2014, they've had their shared universe. They've had their in-continuity, New 52 inspired thing with, you know, Justice League War and Son of Batman all the way up to Teen Titans and Judas Contract. But then they have all their out-of-continuity films, like The Killing Joke, like Batman and Harley Quinn recently, right. like Gotham by Gaslight coming up. So they've sort of had, their shared universe and their Elseworlds stuff. So it seems to me like the live-action division is going in that same direction. I think that's awesome.
And then you can also do lower budget, fare. Like, lower budget R-rated stuff, like maybe, Lobo could fit in that brand. Deadman, if they wanted to do a Deadman movie, I think he'd be good for that brand. I think that's where Justice League Dark should go. It should shift over to that brand. That's my theory on that. But it opens up, for lack of a better word, another world of possibilities for them. And I'm excited. To me, the more DC films, whether Elseworlds or DCEU, the better. So that's my thought on it. Before, there's one more small bit of movie information. I wouldn't say it's groundbreaking news or anything, but Chris McKay, the director of the Lego Batman movie, is currently doing press for, Lego Ninjago or whatever the hell it is. He's a producer on that. And of course, we know that he's writing, he's directing, sorry. The Nightwing live-action standalone movie, which is set in the DCEU. Basically, during the press rounds for the Lego Ninjago movie, he basically said that his plan is to use as little CGI as possible because he wants to do everything practical effects. So the actor who plays Nightwing and his stunt double are going to have a lot of hardcore work in front of them in terms of fight choreography and, looking like he has a gymnastic background. And I like that it's going more grounded and sort of in-camera work as opposed to I got nothing against CGI. You need it when it's needed. But with Nightwing, I think you could pull off the more grounded approach. So I like this news. And he also said that Dick Grayson's backstory as Robin and as a member of the Flying Graysons would feature in the film. What are your thoughts on this, Jordan?
Yeah, well, I think that's great. Everything we've been hearing from Chris McKay about this, it sounds like he's really passionate about the character, and I'm really excited about his take on Nightwing and everything he's been saying, because this is not the first quote we've gotten from him about the movie. We've gotten several at this point, and it seems like he has a really good understanding of the character, and I think that I really like what he's saying about his vision for the movie. It sounds to me, in terms of him using sort of minimal CG, I think that could lend itself, as you were sort of pointing out, to sort of a street level sort of action flick is the way I see it. And I think that's sort of what would be best for Nightwing. I'm excited.
Yeah, I'm in agreement with you. Every time Chris McKay opens his mouth and talks about Nightwing, I'm like, okay, I'm ready for this movie. Whenever it comes, I'm ready.
Let me plug something real quick. Batman on Film did an amazing interview with Chris McKay, I think, when the Lego Batman movie was coming out. And you can really tell how much passion that guy has for this stuff. So it's really exciting.
I actually listened to that episode. And, you can tell the guy, Chris McKay, loves Batman, loves Nightwing. He loves the world. So I think that movie is in good hands. And look, I know it wasn't shown on the screen at Comic-Con with the slate, right? But I think that slate is just what's closer to being put out, being thrust into the next phase of production.
And if I'm not mistaken, McKay talked a little about that, and he said he didn't want to rush it.
And that's how filmmaking should be approached. This idea of having a date beforehand, like, I get it, because there's so many big blockbusters now that you have to stake a claim. But the movie process, develop and make and get all your ducks in a row and then move forward and announce your date. That's how it should be. So Chris McKay is going very old school in that way of thinking. And as far as I'm concerned, if I'm Warner Brothers, let him take his time. You've got a great filmmaker with passion for Nightwing and the Batverse. Just give him the same freedom that you're giving Matt Reeves. That's my advice to Warner Brothers. And that's all we know as of right now on the Nightwing movie. So with that, we're going to switch over to the TV realm, which also has some Nightwing related news. Before we get into, of course, I'm speaking of Titans, which is the live action series that's going to premiere on the as yet unnamed or undated DC streaming service. Before we get to that, though, Krypton has some new casting. Tell us a bit about that, Jordan.
So yeah, that would be, I believe his name is Sean Sipos, has been cast as Adam Strange. He's going to be a series regular on season one of Krypton. It's really exciting. Sean Sipos, I'm not familiar with him as an actor, other than he had the only thing I think I've seen him in is he had a tiny, tiny role in an early episode of Smallville. I think that's the only thing I'm familiar with him from. So I'm not really familiar with the actor, but I'm really excited. When we heard about Adam Strange, just even before he was cast, I got really excited. He's a character that I think, really, I came to love him in Young Justice when he had a pretty big role at the beginning of season two of Young Justice. But just the idea, Krypton I was always excited for, but then once they sort of brought up the premise of these some of these characters that are going to be showing up, I got even more excited. So
because our audience may not, again, maybe our audience hasn't heard this piece of news, but how is a character like Adam Strange, who exists in Superman's present, able to appear on Krypton? Tell the audience, tell our listeners how
The premise of Krypton is basically that there's going to be a plot to go back in time to stop Superman from ever being born. And so basically my assumption is that some of the heroes like Adam Strange and I think Hawkgirl is supposed to appear as well are going to go back and sort of prevent this plot from taking place and to try and help Segel, who's Superman's grandfather, perishing at the hands of, from suffering the fate of this and to make sure that...
he's going
to
die anyway, but let him do it in his own course.
Make sure that he has a kid first. Make sure that he has Jor-El first so that...
Correct. Yes, because we kind of need Jor-El to get to Superman, obviously.
Yeah.
And by the way, if you're confused by any of this, I'm not going to explain the birds and the beasts to our listeners. Go ask your parents. That's not my department. But anyway, as for my experience with the actor, he had a small role in the tail end, the last few episodes of The Vampire Diaries. Yes, I watched that show. Don't judge me, anybody, because what the hell? Why not? It's a guilty pleasure, right? God damn it, leave me alone. But I will say this. he was fine in that. He was perfectly fine in what he had to do there. It was a limited role. But he looks the part. I'm no casting director, so I just have to trust that the people in the room tested him and thought he was perfect for the role, and I'm sure he'll do fine. And I'm excited for Adam Strange coming on that show. I'm excited for Krypton in general. And I know it's 2018, but when is it coming? I want to know.
I don't believe we have a date yet.
Listen, I need dates. I need dates for the DCU movies. I need dates for these TV shows. Because I like to plan things. It's like, look, if that moron Kim Jong, whatever the hell, in the world or whatever, I hope he does it. But if he's gonna do it after all this cool stuff comes out, preferably after years of the DCU. But don't do it at all. Point being, I like to plan my dates around. In our off air podcast planning, I like to plan. I'm very prep time works for Bruce Wayne. I need prep time. I need to know when these movies are coming.
One thing I want to point out about Sean Sipos, technically, and I didn't think about this until just now, technically he'll be, and we'll talk about another one in a sec, technically he'll be the fourth former Smallville actor joining a DC TV show in the near future, returning to the DC universe.
Yeah, and I like that kind of legacy kind of casting, that DC keeps their people in the family. I like that.
No, I don't think they were thinking about that with Sean Sipos, given that I think he was only ever in one scene of Smallville. But with some of the others, definitely.
still cool.
Definitely.
Listen, Smallville ran for 10 seasons. We're bound to get people from that show popping up and, in other DC properties. It's just it's an inevitability. Okay, and so that's all we know about Krypton for now. So you're as up to date as we are. Well, let's move on to the DC streaming service, specifically Titans. We've got a lot of Titans cast, so let's run through the list. Playing Raven is a teenage actress. I believe she's 13.
I believe that's right, yeah.
Tegan Croft. Never heard of her. Personally, I've never seen her in anything. So I can't really comment on her casting or how good she'll be. Cast as Starfire is Anna Diop. Am I pronouncing that correct? I think I'm pronouncing that correct. She was in 24 Legacy, the relaunch of 24, correct?
That is correct. She was also in, the only thing I've seen her on was Everybody Hates Chris, and I don't remember her from that show, but I love that show, so chances are I liked her in it.
And she, as I said, or if it's in my mind, she's playing Starfire. Now, I have to address something because it bothers me every time this happens. The actress is black, and as the internet stupidly does sometimes, there was a small segment of people that chose to freak out over this. Let me just set these people real straight. In case you haven't read a comic book or seen one of the animated movies, I recommend Justice League versus Teen Titans or Teen Titans the Judas Contract. But in case you haven't seen any of that, Starfire's orange skin. Last time I checked, the only orange-skinned human being in the history of the world is Donald Trump. So unless Donald Trump has a sex change and wants to play Starfire, we ain't getting no orange-skinned actress. All right? So it doesn't matter if the actress has black skin, white skin, or any other pigmentation. The point, the biggest issue, whenever you cast a character, can they deliver A, what's in the script, and B, can they represent that character properly? If the answer of yes is if the answer to any of those questions is yes, the color of their skin should not matter.
I agree 100%. Yep.
Case in point: Lawrence Fishburne as Perry White. Close your eyes and watch Man of Steel. And watch him yelling at Lois Lane when she you know, prints that story without his permission. Or when he's telling Clark Kent that he has to do sports in Batman vs. Superman. Or when he does that water wet line, right? Because of when he's talking about crime. That's Perry White, to a T.
He's my favorite live-action Perry White.
But yeah, so you see my point. Like, yeah. So, like, this is 2017, folks. Like, can we get over this garbage?
Absolutely.
Please. So, again, I've heard a friend of mine that actually watched 24 Legacy said he really enjoyed her in the role that she was doing there. So, again, I trust the casting people. And she's a very attractive actress, which is another quality of Starfire. She's a very attractive woman. So, I'm on board. We also have Hawk and Dove are going to be, as far as I understand, they're not part of the Titans, but they're vigilantes that cross paths with the Titans. Am I correct on that?
Yeah, I believe that's right. They're supposed to be recurring characters, I think, in season one with the possibility to become series regulars in season two. So my assumption is they will not be part of the Titans, but I'm guessing it'll be more like the Teen Titans animated series where we saw certain characters like Kid Flash. He would show up, but he wouldn't actually be part of the team, you know? So.
Right, and so those characters have been cast, and playing Hawk, who is the male member of that duo, is former Smallville alum Alan Ritchson, who, as Smallville fans will know, played Aquaman on Smallville.
Great Aquaman.
Yes, and he, I thought he was good, really good in the role. And he also voiced the role of Raphael in the most recent adaptation, the two newer adaptations of that film franchise.
So and he was good. He's worked with Green Arrow.
That is right. So, yeah, I mean, I like him. I like that casting.
Hold on, Adam. He's worked with Green Arrow twice because he's worked with Justin Hartley and Stephen Amell.
What is this show now? The 6 degrees of separation for Oliver Queen?
You know, I love doing that stuff, man.
When did this show become, you know? Somehow we kicked Kevin Bacon out of the conversation and we put Alan Richardson in.
That stuff just fascinates me, thinking about, like, anytime I see a DC actor in, like, another thing, I always start thinking, like, I start seeing them, you know, think about what other DC actors they work with and like, you know what I'm saying?
It's cool. It is cool. So I like him. I think he'll be good in the role. And playing Dove, his female counterpart, his partner, and also love interest, is Mika Kelly. She was in Friday Night Lights. She was in the short-lived Charlie's Angels TV series. And she did that futuristic cop one with Carl Urban that also was short-lived. I can't remember the name of it. But I liked her on Friday Night Lights. And she's stunningly gorgeous. So as far as I'm concerned, you can cast her reading the phone book, and I'd watch that show. So I'm on board with that casting, obviously. What do you think of Mika Kelly and Alan Richardson?
Alan Richardson, I am psyched about. You know, I'm a huge Smallville fan. So, like I said, there's 4 Smallville actors returning to the DC Universe soon on TV. And, well, technically not on TV in the case of Alan Richardson. But, you know, I'm really excited about that. I love him as Aquaman, so I'm really excited to see him as Hawk. Mika Kelly, I'm not familiar with, but you're right, she is gorgeous, and I'm excited to see what she brings to the role of Dove.
And I left one piece of casting to last, for obvious reasons. Dick Grayson, who will lead the Titans at some point in the series, presumably as Nightwing, I would assume, has been cast, and he will be played by actor Brenton Thwaites. Is that how you pronounce it? I'm pretty sure.
Sounds right to me, yeah.
And he was most recently in the latest Pirates of the Caribbean movie. I watched that movie, and while the movie was just okay, I enjoyed it. It wasn't out of this world great, but I enjoyed it. I thought Brenton Thwaites was fantastic in his role as Orlando Bloom's son. So I think he is going to make a fantastic Dick Grayson / Robin / Nightwing. What do you think about Brenton Thwaites? Have you seen him in anything else aside from Pirates?
I have not seen the latest Pirates movie, but I did see him in the film The Giver, where he starred with Rachel Dawes. And
which one? Which Rachel Dawes? Which
Katie Holmes?
Wait, you're gonna do this every time we have a podcast, aren't you?
Yeah, yeah, I really am.
I can sense a trend already.
No, but he was in that, and he was. I thought he was very good in that movie. So I think that he will make a really good Nightwing. I think and I hope. He's older, and that's the thing. They're sort of casting different ages with the Titans. They cast Raven really young. They cast Starfire a lot older, and then they cast Nightwing around Starfire's age. So my guess is that they'll probably play up Dick and Corey's relationship quite a bit on the show, is my guess. And my guess, this is just a prediction, whenever they get around to the Beast Boy casting, my guess is that they might go closer to Raven's age and sort of have that two and two, sort of two younger members and then two older members, probably.
That was my thought as well, and I kind of like that dynamic where you have the two mentors and then the two young members of the team. It's almost like a perfect balance of the Teen Titans comic book and the Titans comic book, which are happening now. So I do like that dynamic. Before we leave Titans and go on to our animated review of Batman the Animated Series, do you think that we could potentially see Dick Grayson start out at the tail end of his career as Robin before and then as the show progresses, transitions into the Nightwing?
And I have spoken a little bit about this on Twitter, and I think it would be awesome if maybe we saw the iconic scene or, you know, and sort of something taking inspiration from the iconic scene from the Judas Contract where he dons the Nightwing costume for the first time. Preferably not the disco suit that he donned in the Judas Contract, you know, modern Nightwing suit. But I think that would be cool to see a scene similar to that and maybe see his transition from Robin to Nightwing. Because it hasn't been specified whether he's playing Robin or Nightwing. Although my guess is, since the actor, I think, is almost 30, my guess is we'll probably see him. I mean, I don't know. It would be kind of weird to see somebody that old in a Robin costume, but...
Well, it would probably be, let's be honest, it's not going to be the green shorts and the tiny elf boots.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, it'll be something closer to... I'm just throwing... I'm throwing this out there. In terms of look, think of Chris O'Donnell in Batman Forever.
Hey, well, say what you want about Batman Forever, but I love Chris O'Donnell's costume in that movie, to be honest.
I enjoy that movie, and I like that costume. I will agree. So I think you'll see him in something more along those lines than if he does start out as Robin. It'll be something akin to that as opposed to the early comic book incarnation of Robin. So, but yeah, we'll see where it goes. Again, that is, I believe it starts filming on September 25th. So, 2 days of this as of this posting or thereabouts. And they're filming, as far as I know, right here in Toronto, in my hometown. So, by the time you're listening to this, we either are just getting close to the announcement of Beast Boy, or we'll already have it, and we'll talk about it on the next episode if we do have it. But that's what we know about Titans. We don't know when it's coming out. It's tied to the DC streaming service along with Young Justice Season 3. I'm excited for both. And again, just let me know when it's coming out. That's all I ask, because you have my money at this point. Let's move on. We've covered. I think we're up to date on the news, correct?
Except for comics news.
Oh yes, correct. There is some comics news. There is a sort of a shift starting with December. Two titles in particular. Nightwing is getting a new creative team. Currently, writer Tim Seeley has been writing Nightwing since Rebirth started. But also before Rebirth, he was writing the Grayson title. Remember when he was a spy? He became a spy very briefly in the comics. Tim Seeley has been writing ever since then, and he is moving on from the title. And writer Sam Humphries, who's currently writing Green Lantern, is going to be writing, or Green Lanterns, with Jessica Cruz and Simon Bass, is going to be writing Nightwing. And then Tim Seeley is going to be taking over Green Lanterns. So and the new artist on Nightwing as of December is going to be Bernard Chang, who's done some work, I believe, on Green Arrow in the past.
I think Batman Beyond as well. I could be wrong.
Yeah,
but I think
and I think he had a stint on Wonder Woman as well, in the New 52, at the beginning. Or maybe that was Cliff Chang. I'm not sure. I know there's more than one Chang.
I know Cliff Chang worked on.
Okay, then I'm incorrect on that. So yeah, but I know that Bernard Chang did work on Green Arrow before Rebirth. So that's what I know him from.
I think that was Cliff Chang too, because I have a Green Arrow Black Canary Cliff Chang statue actually, and I know that.
Well, So then all I know for sure at this point is that Sam Humphries is coming on Nightwing in December. I don't know what this is there.
unless he worked on Green Arrow. Unless both of them worked on Green Arrow. But
I don't know. Anyway, Bernard Chang's the artist. Whatever he's worked on before, I'm sure it looked good. Clearly, it was not any of those titles I previously mentioned. But like I said, I haven't podcasted in a couple of months, so I'm rusty. I'm rusty. You can forgive a little bit of mistakes.
You're Batman in The Dark Knight Returns coming back, and you're
I'm old and miserable. And about to kick Superman's ass at some point. But spoilers if anybody hasn't read The Dark Knight Returns, by the way. And again, if you haven't, I can't help you at this point. All I can tell you is go read the book. But what other comics are getting a shake-up, Jordan?
So, yeah, I don't read Nightwing, so I don't have much to comment on that. But a title I do read is Justice League, and there's a shake-up there, too, where in December as well, I believe, Brian Hitch is leaving, and replacing him is Christopher Priest as a writer, and then the artist coming in is Pete Woods. It's starting with issue number 34. Now, I guess I'll just give my take on this a little bit. I know a lot of people have been pretty down on Brian Hitch's Justice League run. I've been a bigger fan of it than most. However, I haven't loved most of it up until this final arc that he's doing. And right now he's currently on his final arc, which is called Legacy, which I think is just phenomenal. I think three issues have come out so far part of this arc, which has been phenomenal. So at least Brian Hitch is going off on a very, very strong note, in my opinion. So I am sad to see him go, though. But Christopher Priest and Pete Woods, I'm excited to see what they bring to the book. I'm not that familiar with either. I've read a little bit of Christopher Priest's Deathstroke run because I read the Lazarus Contract crossover. But he spoke a little bit about sort of what he was going to try to do. They both spoke a little bit about what they were going to try to do with their run on Justice League once they start. And basically, there were two things that really stood out to me. And one of those is that they're trying to have a real-world approach and sort of doing something, doing some stories about how society responds to the Justice League. And what that really reminds me of is Zack Snyder and his movies. And I know that might be a bad thing to a lot of people, but
it's not a bad thing to me. It's fantastic.
Not me either. I'm a huge fan of Zack Snyder's movies, so that's a great thing in my opinion. Because I really like what Zack Snyder's done in his movies, sort of taking that approach. So I'm excited to see on the comic side of things that the Justice League title might be taking that approach as well. And apparently also they're going to really be exploring the sort of the relationships between the characters on the Justice League. And I think that's sort of something that's been more unique in the past, the Teen Titans books, in terms of exploring the dynamics between the characters on the team, within the team. And but I think it'll be cool to sort of see that dynamic with the Justice League, because that's something I think you don't see as much with them as opposed to the Teen Titans. And we know a little bit about what the solicits have come out for their first two issues of their storyline called Lost. And it's going to be about Batman basically making I'll go ahead and read it because I've got it pulled up. When the Justice League is confronted by three concurrent threats, a sleep-deprived Batman makes a crucial error that causes an unthinkable and potentially unforgivable tragedy. So I think that sounds very, very intriguing. So yeah, what are your thoughts on this, man?
Well, I'll say in terms of Brian Hitch's run, I haven't really liked most of it, but I do like this legacy run that he's on now. I think you're right in saying it's the best that title's been since the New 52 began, or the New 52 Rebirth began. So this last arc, he's going out with a bang, and I like it, and I recommend checking it out if you haven't. But all that stuff sounds fascinating. Yeah, you know, exploring the team dynamic. The little blurb that you read was it's an interesting hook. You know, a sleep deprived Batman. When does he ever get any sleep? Anyway, like he runs out at night, and you know.
Do you remember the Justice League episode? I think it's called Only a Dream, where he's like trying to stay awake because Dr. Destiny is trying to invade their nightmares.
Yes, yes, yes.
That's what it reminded me of.
Yeah, right, I agree. I'm excited. Look, I'm excited. I'm all for it. Let's bring it on. It sounds great. So, and you're right with the Zack Snyder / Chris Nolan, angle there about real world. What if they existed in the real world? That's cool. I like that. So I'll definitely be picking that up in December.
Absolutely.
For sure. I think now that wraps up our news portion. So let's talk Batman the Animated Series on Leather Wings. As I said, we're going to go based on what the DVD order is. So Jordan, just give us a brief, for memory's sake, because it's been 25 years since the show aired. Give us a brief idea of what happened in this particular episode.
Oh, it certainly hasn't been 25 years since I've seen this episode.
Well, of course. But yeah, just...
I rewatched this episode earlier this week in preparation for this. And
as did I.
Okay. Basically the premise of it is that people are mistaking Man-Bat for Batman, and Man-Bat is going through a rampage through Gotham, and people are thinking that it's Batman. But it is not, and so Batman starts investigating. And I guess that's really the sort of the elevator pitch of this episode.
And he got it pretty much bang on. I really enjoyed this episode for several reasons. First of all, I love the fact that this is not an origin episode. So at least for Batman, like what this episode establishes, and I think the whole series, even if you go in episode order as they aired, it works just the same. But what this show establishes is that when we first come into contact with Batman, he's already been Batman for quite a while. There's no origin, you know what I mean? You don't see in this first episode the Wayne's getting murdered. You don't see him training, going around the world training and all that stuff. He's Batman. The world is already exists. And I like that aspect of it. I love the usage of Man-Bat because he is the exact, if you think about it, he's the literal translation of what Batman, a Batman would be. Right? I love that dynamic of it. And I also, what I loved about it was that, Dr. Kurt Langstrom and the formula and his transformation, the way it was filmed and the way it was presented was very much a play on Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde and that mythology. And that to me when you can get away with a little bit of horror aspects in certain Batman stories, go for it, because I think the character and his world lends itself to that. So I thought that was a very appropriate, connection to make and to show. And the other thing I really liked about this episode is that we have Batman as the detective Batman, which, all too often in film and a lot of times even in comics that aren't titled Detective Comics, gets glossed over, the fact that Batman is a detective. And here it's on display in full force. He's going to the pharmaceutical factory as Bruce Wayne on the pretense of giving it a grant or a donation, right, to investigate because Batman gets a recording of the sounds, the sound of Man-Bat, right? And he goes and he investigates, he compares the recording with the sounds of the actual live factory. So you get that dynamic, and he uses the back computer to solve it, and to all these things, blood samples and such, to come up with the identity that Kirk Langstrom is the Man-Bat. And I loved seeing Detective Batman right out of the gate with this show. All that was fascinating to me. It made it even more intriguing. The animation style, I just love it. Like the whole Art Deco look, but with the Gothic element to it. Just the animation has a, it's much like the animation really sets the tone of the show, which is it works as both an adult series, but also we'll do just enough to entertain kids. You know what I'm saying? And I think that's really represented not only in the tone of the story, but the style of the animation. The voice work is fantastic, obviously from especially Kevin Conroy. To me, that is the voice of Batman. So going back and listening to this and hearing it again, especially when it was in its early nascent stages of him developing it, I was a real treat to go back and listen to. The action, him fighting, like him with the like grapple hook, I don't know what the right word is, grapple hooking, I guess, onto Man-Bat, and like they're battling in the sky. That was really, really cool, right? It was a cool visual. So all of it put together, I thought it was a really strong episode. And the fact that it starts with, I know it didn't start like this on TV, like the TV version. So, but on the DVD, we get the actually, I think this animated series will be my first exposure to this episode. I'm a big fan of it, and just watching it brought back so many memories for me. I'm looking forward to exploring this show episode by episode. What were your thoughts on the episode?
Yeah, well, I guess the first thing I should say was that I'm just a little bit too young to have grown up with Batman Animated Series as it aired. So for me, with Batman Animated Series, I had about, growing up as a kid, I had probably about 10 or 15 episodes on various VHS tapes. And that was my introduction to the series, and this was one of them. I had a VHS tape with the first 5 episodes of the series in production order. And of course, in production order, first episode of the series. So those 10 or 15 episodes are some of my favorites of the whole series, just because those are the ones I have the most growing up with as a kid, just because I didn't grow up with the series as it aired. I didn't see it in its entirety until a little bit later, which is unfortunate. But then again, and I'll probably talk about this so many times on the podcast, I have so much love for the anime series The Batman, because that was sort of my Batman anime series that I got to grow up with as it aired. But in terms of these tasks, of course, I have a lot of love for that series too, and this is one of my favorite episodes of the series, because it was one of those 10 or 15 that I have on VHS. I guess just going through the episodes, I'm sure stuff I like. First off, I think it's awesome that Kevin Conroy is with those guys in the helicopter. I don't know if you know what I'm saying, but
yes, screw, you're right.
And I always like to point that out, because I think that's really cool that he actually, even before Batman appeared, he voiced a different character on the show. Like, even that appeared actually in terms of production work.
Yeah.
That appeared before he voiced Batman on the show, which I think is really cool.
He double dipped. Yeah, that's right. He double dipped. You're right.
I guess the other thing you were saying, how phenomenal Conroy's performance is in this episode, is that, I mean, Conroy's always phenomenal. But the scene that really stands out to me for that is when he's talking with Alfred in the Batman movie. And then I think Dr. Marks calls him on the phone, and then he immediately switches to Bruce Wayne. And that switch is just, it's so well done. And you really can see the kind of contrast between the two voices for Bruce and for Batman in that scene. I think that's really cool. You talked a little bit about sort of the horror aspect that's in this episode, and I think that really is true that's there. I think that the most prominent example of that is in the scene where Kirk Langstrom transforms into Man-Bat for the first time you see it. And I think that is just, I think it's kind of terrifying, actually, when you look at it. And I think it's a really cool scene, and I think the animation looks really cool on that. You talked about the animation in general. This is an unpopular opinion. I actually prefer the new Batman Adventures animation style. But I do really like the original BTAS animation style as well, and I think it looks great in this episode, and the character designs, of course, are just awesome. It's interesting that we didn't. It wasn't Ephraim Zimbalist Jr. who voiced Alfred in this episode, because it was before he came on. So I think in this and some of the other, maybe a couple other early episodes, it's actually, I think his name is Clive Revel. Is that what his name is?
I believe you're correct. Yeah.
Okay, that voice is Alfred. So it's kind of jarring when you look at this episode. I thought Clive Revel, if that is his name, did a fine job. I think, but it's just sort of jarring to see hear his voice coming out when you expect, I guess, Ephraim Zimbalist Jr.'s voice to come out of his mouth. So yeah, I just think this is a really strong episode, and you're right, it isn't an origin episode, which they didn't start with B-Tas. They really saved doing some of the origin stuff for Mask of the Phantasm, which, and again, I'll sort of compare it to the Batman, the animated series, the Batman. They did things a little bit differently because they didn't start with an origin necessarily either, but they did sort of start with Batman at the beginning of his career, and then he sort of gained partners as he went through that series, whereas here with Batman the Animated Series, he has Robin right from the start, and then you see Robin's origin later in flashbacks and Robin's reckoning. So I think it's interesting how Batman the Animated Series did that, and I think they pulled it off phenomenally in terms of doing it that way, in terms of not giving you an origin as the first episode. But I thought it worked really well for them. And yeah, I just think overall it's just a great, it really sets the tone for the series. I think, as you pointed out, Batman does a lot of it's really great. I always love seeing Batman do detective work, and you get to see a lot of that. Oh, one more thing I wanted to point out. Harvey Bullock, who's just one of my favorite characters. I think he's just one of the funniest characters in the Batman mythos. I think he gets a lot of great moments in this episode as well. So, yeah, great episode, in my opinion.
All right, so we're in agreement on that. And I think that's going to bring to an end the first episode of Multiverse Musings, a DC Comics podcast. What I will say is that Jordan mentioned the Batman a couple times. We are going to get to some of the other animated series as well. I personally want to explore some of the ones that aren't as heralded as Batman the Animated Series, but I think still deserve a place and a recognition. But we are going to get to them all. Like I said, we plan to cover everything. Just give us time. I think we're doing Batman the Animated Series because it's only appropriate because it's the 25th anniversary, and it is one of the most popular interpretations of Batman. But we are going to get to a bunch of other DC animated ventures, including the Batman at some point. I really had fun here for my first time back in a couple months, Jordan. I hope you enjoyed the experience.
Yeah, absolutely, man. It's been a pleasure. It's been really fun just chatting DC with you and catching up with some of the latest news, talking details. So yeah, great. It was awesome.
And so we're gonna be back. Jordan and I have made a pledge that we're gonna do a weekly show. So we're gonna be back next week. And correct me if I'm wrong, Jordan. But next week the plan is to do the Batman and Harley Quinn animated movie, correct?
Yeah, I believe that is what we talked about, and I think that's a great plan. I think we're just a little bit of a tease. I think we both love that movie, so we're sort of in the minority on that. So I think it's going to be awesome.
It's getting the film is getting mixed reviews, but I will say, look, if you're a fan of these two characters, you owe it to yourself to check it out and make up your own opinion on the film. If you've watched it, great, you'll be right on on par with us for next week. If you haven't watched it, you have a week as of this posting to do so if you want to follow along. Or if you don't care about spoilers and just want to listen to it anyway, that's fine too. But this is the kind of thing you can expect from us. We're going to do a little bit of everything. We're going to do live action TV series. We've got a plan to cover the vast array of DC on TV. We're going to cover that. And we're going to, of course, cover the live action movies. And we're going to be hopefully your one-stop shop for everything DC in a different, as I like to call it, the multiverse of DC entertainment. So hope you enjoyed this episode, and we'll hope that you'll join in next week. Until then,
you want to plug some social media?
Right. Good idea. I'm not used to this social media plugging. If you want to interact with me on Twitter, you can do so at Superhero Sci-Fi.
And yeah, you can find me at BatFanJordanB on both Twitter and on Instagram. And one more thing I'll throw out there is I'll solicit some reviews. So if you enjoyed this first episode, it would help both of us out a lot, I think, to leave a review on iTunes. We'll be up on there, I believe. So that would be awesome.
Yeah. And also, if we're gonna come up with a way to get some questions at some point. We're gonna figure that out. So hopefully, you guys can start sending in questions down the road, and ask us questions or tell us what you if there's something you'd like us to look at and review. We'd be open to taking suggestions as well. We had fun. I hope you enjoyed the episode. There may be a little bit of kinks, but keep in mind this is our first episode, so give us time. We'll work on those. But we hope you enjoyed it, and we hope that you'll be back next week. Until then, have a great weekend, a great Batman Day, or Harley Quinn Takeover, whichever way you look at it. And we'll see you next week. So long, everybody.
Bye-bye.